You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Good morning. It's a nice rainy Saturday here in Reading. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to my show Positively Healthy on KCNR, 1460 AM. Gosh, Jim, our producer. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what's up with the weather?
It's like October, and we're getting some rain, and it's going to be really windy.
Oh, it is?
Wind's really going to pick up now, like 30-mile-an-hour winds tomorrow. It's supposed to rain pretty much off and on all day today and tomorrow, and Monday slacking off a little bit, and it looks like Tuesday we'll get a little bit of sunshine. It's going to be cool, too, like 55 for the high, or actually about 60 for the high, and it's about 55 right now. So
okay, we're prepared.
Welcome to fall.
Yeah, I guess I'll be wearing these boots and this jacket for a while. All
it's
right.
It's a good look for you, Judy.
Thank you. Hey, so our show today, we have Dan Martin from Lazy 69 Ranch here today, and you know he's going to be a regular guest on the show. And what that means is that you know we have a few people now lined up to come in and talk to us for about 15 minutes on a regular basis, just to share their wisdom. You know, we have a few chefs coming in that are going to teach us simple recipes, and they were on about a month ago, and they're coming, I think, next week. I should know that, and they're coming next week, and so. You know, we don't really have a cooking show, but we're trying to educate people so that you know how to cook real food. And a lot of the premise and promotion of this show is to empower you to be able to know what a baked potato means. Some people might think like baked and then potato, but we've got a generation out there, maybe even two, that don't know how to do that. And so part of being able to be a healthy person, not eat fast food, not have a lot of preservatives added to your food means that you're going to have to cook at home. And so, or you know, frankly, the restaurants that have cleaner food, they cost more. So, one way to spend 64 cents and hardly, you know, not very many calories is to make a baked potato. And so I'm saying that because there are just certain basics that we have to cover. And I can tell you how great salad is, but it's not going to be that exciting for you if you don't know how to make a really easy and delicious salad dressing. So I know that salad dressing will be part of next week's show. And we're trying to do things like 5 ingredients or less, because if you're me, I kind of use myself as a barometer. I really like to cook, but I'm not very good at it. And I love good ingredients, high quality ingredients. And I need them to be really healthy. I need every meal to be medicine, because that's what it takes to try to have a semi-decent immune system. And so we have regular guests coming on, and Dan Martin will be one of them. He'll swing in and talk to us for about 15 minutes once a month, or maybe even call in if he's just really busy with his cows, chickens, and the whole egg collection part of his life. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Trudy. I'm honored to be here.
Oh, good.
For a chicken and cow farmer to have a voice and reach the customers, this is awesome.
Wow, good. You know, you look pretty cleaned up. I don't really see a whole lot of cow or chicken on you.
No, I left that at home.
Okay.
And, my wife is going to be starting to collect eggs today, so it's kind of like almost like half a day off for me. I get to get out of the egg collection, but I have to help pack them when I get home.
Okay, so. Well, you know, that's part of life. And then we also have sometimes co-host Mark Beecham with us. He has a lot of questions he wants to ask Dan today, too. We're just going to double team him. So welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Trudy.
Yeah. And so, you know, I want to start with, you are a sponsor of this show, and I love your eggs and your beef, and, I eat them. They're part of my diet, and we really promote the eating of clean food, meat or eggs with no antibiotics, no hormones. So your food is actually medicine, and it's healing you, making you stronger, and that's part of your philosophy too. And let me just kind of like give you a little hat tilt for that. You know,
Thank you.
Appreciate your commitment there. And when we're learning about, you know, I want to go over so much with you today, but I want to start with a little bit about your business model and about our education level as consumers, because it sounds to me like we've hit a little place where, as a consumer, maybe it's because it's my blind spot. I'll start there. You know, it's sort of like I was raised in the generation where we had, when it came to dancing, we had slow dancing and fast dancing. And, you know, there, I don't really know anything beyond that. And so with beef, it's either burger or steak. And I don't really know what all those cuts are. You have this great shirt on today that shows a side of beef and all these cuts. But then I also know there are a lot more. And part of having you be a success is that we need people to understand what they can do with these other cuts and start getting used to the name of them. Like, what are they? You know? And
yeah.
So I don't want people to be like me. I want them to be like the new me. So, yeah.
And it's really not that hard. And there's so much diversity on a cow as far as the texture and flavor of cuts. And it all can be as simple as garlic, salt, and pepper to season it, slow cook. You know, there's really a lot of things you can do with it. And typically, as you said, you know, people know burgers and steaks, and part of that is because that's what they're served in restaurants. That's the only thing on the menu, and it's become popular. So, you know, it's really challenging. I think what you have to do to start, you know, is I consider my customers as co-producers, they as co-ranchers, somebody that is telling me this is where I want you to go with this, and so I kind of allow that, but the eating off of the cow is easier than you think,
okay.
You know, and so we'll hit on that a little bit more and maybe introduce some new things that are available and easy.
Oh, I heard the word easy. Okay. All right. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a radio break and we'll be right back.
My name is
Cobblestone and you're listening to my show. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt and you're listening to my show Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. And you know, if you're new to this show, it's about a lot of little things you can do to make your life just a little healthier. And so, you know, if you make one little change today, then you just made one little change today. It's that simple. And so what I like about real food is that it's clean, it's simple, it's pure, it doesn't have a lot of pollution, and it moves your health in the right direction. And I want to welcome Dan Martin back from Lazy 69 Ranch. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm your unadulterated protein salesman. That's another word for me now.
High protein.
Yeah, high protein.
Here he comes, high protein. And so we were talking about one way for the smaller rancher to get their foot in the door when it comes to having a successful and broad-based business, is that there are a whole lot of cuts of a cow, of a steer. Do I need to say steer?
Cattle, beef.
Cattle, beef, okay. That we need to learn about, because what happens is we all go and we buy the one thing we know, and then everything else gets made into hamburger, right? Because it is basically supply and demand.
And I have to sell everything off the cow.
Yeah.
I can't just sell the burger and the steaks and hope to make a living off of it.
Right.
So, you know, things like something that I really like that not a lot of people would give credit, probably because of its name, is it's a chuck eye steak. And the chuck eye steak has a diverse texture to it. It has an eye in the middle, much like a rib eye would have, and similar texture. It has a really good amount of marbling. It has a very good flavor to it. It has some loose textures to it. And, you know, it's half the price of some of your expensive steaks. And honestly, that's the one I keep. That's the one I eat at home.
Uh-huh.
That's the one that's one of the ones that I try to save for myself. So maybe I just messed up and gave my secret away there.
Yeah, sneaking the little
chuck
secrets
eye,
out.
I have them cut pretty thick.
Where do you get these steaks? I mean, you go to the butcher's. Where do you find them? You have to go to like R&R or someplace. Where would you order a chuck eye steak?
You know, a chuck eye steak is sometimes you'll see it here and there. It's really not. I guess it really word isn't out, and people don't recognize it.
No.
It doesn't ring a bell like it does.
Ribeye, I totally get it.
Yeah, with ribeye, New York, filet mignon. You know,
yeah.
People, Orchard Nutrition has a full array of our cuts there. We're trying to break some more ice with Holiday Market and maybe introduce some things like top sirloin.
Okay.
Is another fairly economical.
We've heard of that. Yeah.
You know, fairly economical, nice texture, nice flavor to it. Grills up nice, cooks up nice, no problem. So it's chuck eye and top sirloin are two that you can look for.
Okay, well, we have a caller on line one. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, is this Carl, owner of the station?
This is Carl. You know what?
Hey.
I was listening to the show because I always listen to the show, and I had a question about organic beef.
Oh, good. Okay, well, we've got the master here, so.
I know. How would you compare organic beef to, say, wild game?
Organic beef to wild game. Some of the grass-fed beef, the beef that is raised on pasture only, as my beef is, has a richer flavor to it, but it's not a gamey flavor. Sometimes people consider venison having that little gamey flavor to it. And what we've done is we've strived now to eliminate any gamey flavoring and to where the fat is buttery tasting and it doesn't have an offensive taste or texture to it. So I would say that there's no reason why organic beef should taste radically different than any other beef, and it certainly doesn't have to taste off or gamey flavoring. I'm not sure, Carl, if that's what you're...
Well, it's what I of course have tasted your beef and have used your products, and I don't detect that at all. But I was just wondering as far as the health, on the health level, since wild game are out there just eating, like you said, grazing, eating grass. Would they be necessarily a healthier brand? Or a healthier meat than an organic that's taken care of and that's out on the it's out on grass and grain that's hasn't been treated.
I think there's some real parallels there between the potential health benefits of eating something wild game and pasture beef. And the Journal of Animal Science is shown clearly in research that they've sampled the fat off of pastured beef products, and it's higher in omega-3s, the good fats, and the conjugated linoleic acid, CLAs.
Oh, I'm impressed.
That's a big word.
All one word.
So it's there. The proof is actually out there. It's been studied. We actually are going to send one of our beef sample back to a laboratory to have it analyzed for a fatty acid profile. And, yeah, so there's a lot of potential there. So basically what you're getting is all the good fats for you without, having to eat something that's gamey flavored. So I think there's some real parallels between some of the health benefits of eating wild game, making that feed-food connection. Healthy animals eating their native diet pass along those attributes to you as you eat the protein from the animal. So making that feed-food connection is really important, as you have with the wild game.
So you would say that they're both really healthy?
It's been my experience, because typically your wild game are, they're not grazing around downtown L.A. They're out, eating their native diet, and it's the same with the cattle. Our cattle aren't in the feedlot, rubbing shoulders with the next cattle, eating grain out of a trough, waiting to go to the slaughterhouse. They're out grazing on their natural diet, basically maturing in their own time.
Okay, well, that's what I had a question about it because, one, I do enjoy your products and also enjoy wild game, too. So, hey, thank you so much. Great show.
And we love antelope chili, so keep cooking that there, Mr. Bot.
I think we can arrange that.
Good,
maybe we can work
good.
A trade there, Carl.
I feel a trade coming up.
I don't get to that. The only hunting I do anymore is chasing ground squirrels away from my feed. So, maybe we can. I don't get much time away, so we'll have to work on that.
Okay.
All right.
See you soon.
All right. Thanks. Okay. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. So, Dan, then you're talking about, let's take a quick radio break, and we'll come back and we'll talk more about this chuck eye steak. And if we say it enough, it'll become a common word. In fact, I'm going to get a bumper sticker that
then
says
what am I
chuck eye. I think you might have to come up with something else. Okay. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we're going to be right back after this.
We have a report of an accident on Interstate 5 near Turntable Bay. Apparently a small vehicle and a big rig, one lane is closed in that area, so if you're driving on Interstate 5 north of Reading in the Turntable Bay area, be aware of that. Now back to Trudy Pratt on KCNR 1460.
Down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just
welcome back. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. In the studio, we have Dan Martin from Lazy 69 Ranch and sometimes co-host Mark Beecham. And, we're double-teaming Dan today, asking him a whole lot of questions. And part of, the part of the show we're working on right now is these other cuts of beef. What are we going to learn? And you have taught us about something called a chuck eye steak.
Yeah, so other cuts of beef that are economical.
Economical.
That you don't have to compromise, the taste or texture on. You can buy a chuck eye steak for much less than...
Than a ribeye steak.
Okay. And honestly, as I said earlier, the you know, my beef is vacuum packed in these nice bags, and I'm sometimes guilty of accidentally dropping a chuck eye steak on the floor of the freezer, and taking it and having to defrost it and eat it myself.
Yeah, once you do that.
That's about the only way. But, yeah, the chuck eye steak to me, it's economical. It has a variety of textures. It has an eye piece in the middle, much like a ribeye. It has that feathery edge, much like a ribeye does on the outside. Half the price of a ribeye. Lots of good grass fat in there. And the flavor, and you can grill it, and, you know, that's an economical way to, you know, you can support local and eat a chuck eye steak. You don't have to go with the Fab Four, I call them, you know, the New York, the ribeye, the filet, or the burger. You know, that's always been the Fab Four for as far as beef. And
we know what we know. And all we know is what we know.
Yeah. And partially it's because restaurants, that's all they really offer. And so people can't order a chuck eye steak necessarily. Or they can't order, you know, something like a flat iron is not available anywhere, which also is also a chuck steak, believe it or not. A flat iron is also known as a top blade chuck steak. But what they do, they call it top blade because there's a shoulder blade up there in the front of the cow. And instead of cutting it across section, they cut they basically fillet it off of that bone, that blade bone in the front. And it comes out a fairly thin steak. It kind of plumps up when you cook it. It's quick to defrost. I mean, if you're in a hurry, people are always, I don't have time to cook your beef. Well, you don't need a master's degree in, you know, culinary arts to be able to cook a flat iron. You take it out of the freezer. It defrosts quickly. You throw
How do you defrost it?
You know, typically...
Do you put it in warm water, or do you take it out of the package first?
Our packages are vacuumed. I typically tell people that if they're in a hurry to defrost, whatever you do, don't put it in the microwave because I will come and take your beef from you. You know, don't defrost in the microwave.
Yeah.
It rubberizes the beef.
Okay.
And so you just don't need to go there. And what I tell them to do is if put it in some water, you know, put it in some warm water or just, you know, tap water, with the caveat that if you are on city water and have a lot of chlorine in your water, and there's a pinhole in the package or something like that, and that water's going to get in there. So that's kind of the pitfall of quick defrosting in water is, you know, whatever's in the water is going to be on your beef if there's, you know, sometimes when during defrosting the packaging will loosen up a little bit. But
let's say you thawed it that morning, you know, and it's been in the fridge and you're home, and now what do you do with these things? Like, you've got something called a flat iron steak. It's a thinner steak. You've got your pan, and you've got your stove top, and you've got all these different temperatures to choose from.
Sure.
What do you do?
You know, it depends kind of on your preference. The flat iron is fairly forgiving because it has a generous amount of marbling in it, and so when that fat renders when you cook it, it creates a nice loose texture. And if I had to cook indoors, I mean, I would say I love to cook things in a cast skillet when I can, just because it's kind of a romantic thing, but it's a cast skillet really adds a flavor to food to me. It really does.
Okay.
And so I would do, if I had to cook indoors, I would consider getting that cast iron. You can use a dab of coconut oil or something to wet the pan with if you needed to. Some people use a little bit of butter.
Okay.
You know, again, depending on taste and what your diet tells you need or don't need. And, you know, basically sear that thing on each side, maybe just turning it once. Get a good sear on the side. It seals in the juices. Flip it over. Garlic, salt, and pepper is all you need, and you've got a steak.
Okay, so now searing must mean I'm on a pretty high temperature.
Am I,
or where am I supposed to be? At medium high, or?
I like to, you know, of course, there's gas, electric, you know, the inherent differences between the two. But what I really like to do is I like to get that thing about as hot as you can. You know?
Okay. So you're going
still
wide
safe.
Open.
If you've got oil in the pan, you of course know what you're. But yeah, I like to get it as hot as you can, and just sear it for a short period on each side. And really
is a short period like 3 minutes, or is a short period 5 minutes?
For a flat iron, I would say, you know, about 3 minutes per side is all you need for a flat iron.
So you're saying in like under 10 minutes you're eating?
You're you know, from the time you walk in the door and think about it, 30 minutes later you're probably going to be eating the flat iron because you've got it out of the fridge. It's a thinner steak. It doesn't take forever and a day to defrost.
Okay.
You can throw it on a hot pan, sear it, season it to taste, and you've got a really nice, you know, you don't need to have a red wine reduction or anything with it. I mean, you can just eat it like that, garlic, salt, and pepper, and the flavor of the beef, and they're all very complimentary. So it's a quick, it's easy.
So there are three things I need: garlic, like garlic powder or whatever, right?
Granulated
salt.
Garlic.
Okay.
You know, they have California granulated garlic. You can get organic. And you can get some Celtic sea salt is our favorite.
Salt.
We know that. And some ground black pepper.
Okay, and so those three things just live out in my kitchen.
And they're
there's the pan. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that I'm feeling good about
and
it.
And you could do that with most anything. And
that's the flat iron. Do I do this? What do I do with this chuck eye thing?
You know, I got to be honest. My favorite thing is to barbecue them.
Oh.
Yeah, because I have them cut thicker. I have them, it's called a cowboy cut, which is like a 2-inch thick cut.
Wow.
Because, you know, I personally like my meat rare in the middle. But
me
I like
too,
that
yeah.
I like that sear on the outside,
okay.
The first eighth or quarter of an inch. I like it browned, and you know, so you get a difference in texture between the outside and the inside. I like to barbecue them. If you don't have a barbecue, you can do just like with the flat iron, except you're looking at more like 7 minutes a side.
Seven.
So you're talking about
down.
15 minutes for a chuck eye steak, a thick one.
Same thing. Salt, pepper, garlic.
That's my favorite. That's I have tried. I've gone, you know, basically around the world with seasonings.
Yeah.
And that's what I always come back to.
Around the world.
I think that's great. That's what I always
simple. Come back to. Hey, simple, easy. Okay. Those are words I love. We're going to take a radio break, and this is Doctor. Do you have a question?
I have a question.
Oh, you can have a question.
Yeah, I'm here. I can go outside.
Wait, you only
and call
said
it.
There were two of you tag teaming me today.
No,
three.
We got you covered, Dan. Hey, I always went, and I love to barbecue steaks, tri-tip, whatever. But I always marinate ahead of time, and I use some liquid marinades, and also occasionally some dry rubs, which I understand is actually better. And I kind of like that, but I haven't really gotten into it. Is that a good idea? Because what you're saying with the pan frying, like you're talking about, or the searing, you're not doing anything ahead of time to the meat, right?
You can. It doesn't preclude you from doing it. I'm thinking taking the simplest approach. Is if you walked in the door and forgot that to take something out for dinner, you know, earlier in the day, then, you know, dry rubs are the way to go. Marinating is great. You have to watch some of the prepackaged marinades because they have a lot of stuff that actually breaks down the meat, you know, in there. And some of them have a lot of MSG in them because that's what's breaking it down and giving that nice salty flavor. I like to make my own marinades. Bragg's Liquid Amino.
Mm.
Is one that we use. Gives a little bit of a salty soy flavor without being too strong. You know, I've done, you know, I'd say experiment. People have used salad dressing, Italian dressing to marry with. Beer, red wine, depending on, you know, a tri-tip or something, you may have a good taste to it. So certainly nothing wrong with marinades if you have the time. And you can identify, you know, which ones contain good ingredients, and I'm kind of always afraid of the ones that actually, like the 30-minute marinades, are scary to me because you put a piece of meat in that for 30 minutes, and it's like it eats the meat. It's and it kind of makes it's like
I want to eat the meat.
You know, it's, yeah,
I'm guilty of the meat.
What's it doing to your brain? Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages on KCNR.
Harrison.
Well, what a perfect rainy day here in October of 2010. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to our show Positively Healthy, and we are learning new cuts of beef from Dan Martin from Lazy 69 Ranch. We've learned how to cook a flat iron steak in about 6 minutes, and we've learned how to cook a chuck eye steak in about 7 minutes a side there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Done. Dinner's on.
Dinner's on.
And with a simple salad?
Yeah.
You've got, you know, excellent protein.
And that baked potato that's just in there baking.
You've got a good balance.
That's what baked potato means. That's faster than fast food,
and,
right?
And cost-wise, you said a 64-cent baked potato salad that you threw together yourself.
I know.
And a chuck-based steak that is half the price of your top-end steaks that with the same flavor and texture. You're in it.
I know. Probably, I don't know. I can't add that in my head, but we don't have enough facts, but it is reasonable, people. Mark, you have a question?
Yeah, speaking of cuts of meat, what is it with our love affair in California, or especially the North State, tri-tip? I mean, how many tri-tip sort of implies that there are three to a cow, but I gather there's only one tri-tip steak in a cow, and that's amazingly inefficient, right? I mean, if you go to a place and there's a tri-tip barbecue and there's 250 tri-tip, that means there are 250 cows that have been slaughtered to provide 250 tri-tips?
Basically, yeah. There's actually two tri-tips per beef.
Okay.
So it'd only be 125 cows. So, yeah.
But for your party.
I feel better now.
But it's interesting that the tri-tip, the butcher's name for it is a bottom sirloin. And what they did was they needed to market that. And you know, and the East Coast, if you go and ask for a tri-tip, they kind of look at you funny. And it's kind of a West Coast marketing thing that they needed to market these things. But now you have whole events based around a cut of beef that there's only two of, and tri-tip barbecue, and that's that conditioning that people in that market, excellent job of marketing, conditioning people to look for tri-tip barbecues because that's the only thing you should be eating. And the name tri-tip, it's kind of a triangular shape. That's where it gets its popular name from. And, you know, it's tri-tip is good. Is it my favorite? No, I would rather have a chuck eye steak, texture-wise. People seem to marinate the heck out of tri-tips to try to make them something else. It's really a good job of marketing a bottom sirloin cut. And if you drive by one of these, like you say, one of these barbecues that has all these tri-tips out there, I'm like, man, how do they do this? How many cattle are they moving commercially to be able to provide, fill a barbecue with tri-tips? It's really interesting.
So your challenge is you've got this big animal, and you end up selling some steaks and a tri-tip, and the rest of it, which is not all the rest of it, but a good portion of the rest of it is, could be like this, these other steaks you're talking about, or other cuts of beef, but there's no market for it, so you end up grinding it up and selling it for this low dollar price as
yes.
ground beef.
Only because people are just not accustomed or they aren't comfortable going outside of the Fab Four I mentioned earlier, the New York, the ribeye, the filet, or the burger. And they're just not, and the tri-tip they're comfortable with. And, I'm very creative with my cut list. I have our butcher does an excellent job. I create cuts. I have fajita stir-fry strips cut out of the round, which is kind of towards the rump of the animal, the leaner beef. A one-pound package of fajita stir-fry for $5 or $6, you've got a one-pound, instant meal right there you can add some veggies to in a pan, and you're done. So, and no matter how creative I am with that cutout, 40 to 45% of any given beef carcass ends up as hamburger.
Hmm. Wow.
That's just a fact of life that people may or may not appreciate or understand. If you've ever raised your own beef, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And it surprises people that the entire beef is not filet mignon and tri-tip. At 40 to 45%, that is part of the challenge. And that burger is typically marketed below the average cost of production per pound. So that forces our hand in terms of, well, we lost money on 45% of the carcass, so we have to try to recover that and pay the bills with the other 55% of the carcass, but they only know four cuts
right.
or three cuts from the burger, aside from that. And so it's very challenging as a business, when you kind of think about, well, I want to go into raising something for a business. These are the things, questions you have to answer up
right,
front.
Right, absolutely.
And know about.
Can you teach the people of Shasta County the chuck eye or the flat iron? It's like if we can just get those to be common names, then I...
People would pay less for New York and filet, in theory.
In theory, they would. Because the demand would be reduced. I have to charge an outrageous amount for my filet mignon because, as with the tri-tip, a typical beef would yield, say, 7 to 8 pounds of filet mignon. That's it. Out of a 330-pound or so net packaged yield, 7 or 8 pounds
wow.
of filet, and it's in great demand. And you have to control that with the price.
Yeah.
And so, theoretically, if people were more diverse in their menu selection, then they would still be able to have access to those higher-end cuts at possibly a more reasonable price because they're helping me move the entire beef and eat the entire beef instead of just eating the top-end cuts.
Now, we make a lot of our choices based on what we see in a restaurant. So I know that in our town we have Moonstone Bistro and we have the Woodside Grill out at the Gaia Hotel. We also have Anselmo mm-hmm. Winery. They have really good grass-fed. They have Prather Ranch, and they have their own beef. And what is it? Like, how do we get the chefs included in these words like flat iron steak? I've actually, flat irons are in restaurants now, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, they become
but
popular.
The chuck eye, I don't know if it is because I'm not there eating. And
right. And the flat iron, again, is also known as a top blade chuck steak. It comes off of the chuck. It's not a filet mignon, type cut. I think what really is going to take is, you know, you talked about Alice Waters some time back about how she was instrumental in bringing the farmer and the consumer together. And I think that's key in that we have to treat the restaurants and the customers as co-growers or co-producers. And we're all kind of in this together. You know, we can help each other. You know, if you are willing to learn about these new cuts and experiment with them and provide them to the customers, you know, will go for it. And that kind of comes full circle around.
So we're back to customer and consumer education. We can't get away from that, can we? So
no, I think it, that's what it really is going to take, is getting people on board. And then once they have these cuts and they're like, why haven't I done this earlier?
Right.
I tell people that and I say, hey, try this one. And they're like, dude, do you have any more of those things? You know, I've never had something so good. And I'm like, yeah, it's just because it's different.
Wow. You know? Okay, we can get used to this. Okay, people. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back here on KCNR 1460 after this.
Citizens
are listening to our show, Positively Healthy. We have Dan Martin from Lazy 69 Ranch in the studio. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Hey, let's go to our caller on line one. Ron, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, what kind of question would you like to ask today,
well,
to Dan?
I don't have a question. I've got a suggestion. You ought to talk about cooking roast. I have a Dutch oven, or sometimes I use a stainless steel pressure cooker. And what I do is I sear the meat in olive oil, and then I cut up a bunch of red onions. I like those best. They're sweet. And I put that in on top of it, and I use a cup and a half or maybe 2 cups of a red, like a Merlot wine, to cover the bottom of the pressure cooker. Then you can use, I use a KC Masterpiece. It's a
now what's that?
KC Masterpiece.
Uh-huh.
It's a I can't think of what I'll call it, the barbecue sauce. You
oh,
can
it's
use
a
whatever
sauce.
You want.
Okay.
Anyhow, then I cook it in that, and it makes a pretty good gravy. And like I said, you can use any kind of a whatever you got for your barbecue sauce, whatever your favorite is. And that's how I do it, and it comes out pretty good. And it might even work pretty good for Carl's wild game that he has. So anyhow, that's just my suggestion.
Okay, I'm going to just run this back to you here. So you have in a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to, but before you put the roast in the pressure cooker, you're going to sear the meat over here on a pan, right?
With put the olive oil in the pressure cooker and heat it up pretty good, like you do your flat pan.
Oh, okay, so you're going to sear
it right
there.
I put olive oil in there.
Okay, and then once it's seared, you're going to add red onions on top of that. And how many red onions?
Whatever you like. I just put 2 or 3 in because I like the onions.
Mm-hmm.
And they provide some liquid.
And then the liquid I use I use a Merlot wine to cover the bottom of the pressure cooker, whatever you need.
And how long do you pressure cook something like that?
Well, it depends on how much the pressure cookers usually have a time limit on how much per pound, like, say, 45 minutes for a couple, 3 pounds or whatever.
Okay.
And that's how... And that's how I fix a roast if I don't use the Dutch oven.
That's a great, great suggestion. I don't know why I didn't think of it. You know, our chuck roast, which happened to be on sale right now at Orchard, same thing. Crock pot is another way. You know, Ron's recipe is excellent because it's bulletproof, right, Ron? It falls apart, tender. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't go wrong with it.
And you can probably eat it for days.
You can, exactly. What we do is we'll throw a big rolled and tied chuck roast in the crock pot in the morning, like on a day like today. Go about our busy day.
Mm-hmm.
House smells good. Your dinner is done. Your chuck roast falls apart. What you don't eat that night can go into leftovers, enchiladas, tacos, shredded beef, you know, whatever you're going to do. And so that's an excellent suggestion, Ron.
Yeah. But thank you.
You bet. Okay.
All right. Now,
bye.
Now, Dan, I want to come back to talking about small businesses. And, you know, you're an inspiration to people who want to start a business. They have a vision. Maybe they have in your case, you had a fabulous job that you decided to, well, you just had a calling, really, to get over here in this whole ranching farming thing. And what suggestions do you have for people who, you know, we know I'm on a quest here to try to help this economy by getting businesses started, because a lot of things we buy from outside of the area, we sure should be buying them locally.
Absolutely. It's here.
Yeah.
The resources here. You know, what I tell people is typically you have a business plan. Any prudent business advisor would tell you, get a good plan together, you know. But what I tell people ahead of that is what is your passion? Because, and then come up with a plan. If you can, because really, when you, you will be engulfed by your business.
Yeah.
Like it or not. So you need to like it. And you need to have a passion for it. And then you need to identify, can I develop a plan that will pay the bills, that, you know, will make me sustainable? And I did. I had an excellent paying job. And, you know, I did that and this at the same time. It's very difficult to be funded now. None of the banks are letting go of any money for a frail, you know, business that, you know, is tied to livestock, something that lives. And so it's very, we have a very delicate, and the banks kind of look at you like, well, you know, we really, you're high risk.
You're high risk, exactly.
So have a plan, have a passion for something. And, you know, I have a passion. I mean, I've always loved to be around birds. I have 2,000 hens up there now, and... You know,
and you're just getting started.
People tell me I can do things, get the hens to do things, you know, and behave in ways that they haven't seen before, just because I have a passion for doing it, and I read the signs and I recognize them and I react to them. And so I would say anybody starting out is, first, you know, whatever your passion is, go for it. However, having said that, it is very difficult funding wise. You need to make sure that your economy of scale is appropriate. And what I mean by that is, I was mentioning to Mark here earlier that, for example, to sell in a store may require you to have a product liability insurance policy, $2 million policy to play.
Yeah.
If you want to sell in my store and somebody does something silly with your eggs, like leaves them in a car on a hot Redding day and then decides to eat them, you know, and get sick or something, or, you know, lets the beef, you know, go bad or something in their car.
Turn blue
and
or
then,
green.
You know, comes around and blames you. You know, you need to have some protection. The store needs that protection. So there's an economy of scale of things. And what I mean by that is there's an infrastructure you have to build around your business, especially if you have a perishable product as I do. I have to have a refrigerated truck. I have to have an accountability trail from, you know, time, everything I do, but packing the egg to delivering to the store. You don't necessarily have to have a barcoded product. Especially if you go to someplace like Orchard Nutrition where they get it.
Mm-hmm.
They would play with the local farmers and help, you know, propel them. But whether I sell a dozen eggs or 100 dozen eggs a day, I still have to have that truck and that truck payment and that electricity bill to keep that dozen or 100 dozen cold. It doesn't cost me anymore to fill the truck. So basically you have to understand that there's an economy of scale and be very realistic with yourself. I know it's easy when you start a new business, you're excited about it, you have a passion for it, you need to then move to the reality section and really nail down who is your customer, how will you reach them, you need to have a steady production rate, because people, if they like your product, they want it, and you can't say, well, I don't have any more now, because they don't understand that. They don't understand the other end of things.
Okay. So, interesting. You know, when we come back from this break, I know that you've had, you basically have sold out a lot of your eggs and you've sold out certain parts of your, you know, you've had trouble keeping consumers supplied with certain cuts of beef, and you've joined in with what could have been a competitor, but you pulled them in as a friend and kind of business colleague type group. And that's impressive. That's a fun cooperative way of looking at competition. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and we'll be right back.
You can save your business.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. Welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We're talking with Dan Martin here from Lazy 69 Ranch. And before we went to the break, Dan, we were talking about how your way of growing, you're actually, instead of when people grow, often they start outsourcing to other areas, you're pulling in local people. So
yeah.
Tell us what you're doing.
In my usual fashion, I'm doing exactly the opposite of the commercial trend. And, you know, Henry and Pam up at Hat Creek Grown are basically helping me raise my cattle now. They're in Shasta County, so I used to impress people when I'd tell them that my beef came from California or that my beef came from neighboring counties, because these are people that were buying beef from New Zealand.
Right.
Another continent. And, you know, or Australia, New Zealand, another, you know, whole neck of the woods, basically. And now what I've done is I went to Henry and I laid our cards out on the table. We potential competitors, both grass-fed operations now, Henry converted over. and basically asked him, you know, he is one of the finest graziers or cattlemen around, and he knows what quality beef is. He's one of a handful of people that really knows and has an eye for it and an art for getting the cattle in that mature prime condition.
Wow.
And so basically he's helping me now. So this is another thing to consider. There's this competitive nature when you start a business. And you know, you have to know, identify who's your competition. Can you compete?
Yeah.
If your competition is Walmart, you may not be able to compete because you don't have the economy of scale to offer, you know, the pricing down to consumers. So I'm bucking the commercial trend by pulling tighter and tighter to where now we are truly in poultry and in beef a Shasta County operation.
How cool is that?
You know, it's a little bit of a compromise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going with my competitor. And we decided, you know, that we are much stronger together and marketing our product together. And, you know, there's occasions when he's out of beef and I have some and I give beef to his customers. And it's a unique way of looking at things. I tell people, don't be afraid of your competition. Know them, get to know them, and understand it. And there may be ways that you're stronger together.
Oh, I love it. Now, Mark, you had a question.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question related to government regulations and what kind of barrier to entry they may throw up. And a couple of months ago, you loaned me a book that you had by Joel Salatin, and the headline the title very provocative: "Everything I Want to Do Is Illegal." And he talks about raising eggs and, you know, providing bacon to his customers. He's a fairly successful organic farmer on the East Coast, and really provocative topics, interesting stories, but his success and your success sort of belies the alarmist tone of the title of his book. So how daunting is it to work around these regulations? And how daunting has it been for you? You obviously have succeeded.
Yes, I think, you know, at some point I can write a book of workarounds, just because you have to be innovative and creative, flexible. And fortunately here in Shasta County, we have an excellent ag department that is, instead of going in there, instead of them being the big bad regulator, they are right behind you all the way saying, yeah, go stick it to the big guys, and here's how we're going to help you. And if we have to give you some allowance here or there, so it is daunting. I would basically encourage people to understand what the regulatory environment is like. That's another part. After you have your passion and then your business plan, understand your regulatory environment. Different products, especially perishable products, there's an inspection process. But in the East, he had problems because he was bucking big companies, and I'm doing the same thing, and my trend is coming inward. I'm pulling inward local, and instead of outsourcing things. And I think that the difference is you really, that passion that you have that I started with will get you these workarounds. Joel talks about how much cleaner his chickens were that he processed himself than sending them to basically a factory to have them processed. So it didn't make sense for him to truck these things. And then the coliform units that they came back with a test were much higher than the commercially processed chicken than his. So it is, it's not insurmountable, but it's significant. And you need to be aware of what the regulatory environment is. And the Department of Ag will tell you that up front. Not only will they tell you that, but they will help you succeed in that. And I think that's the key, is get to know your local ag department. Join the Farm Bureau. And that you have a lot of allies that will help you work through the maze and understanding that what you're trying to do is a legitimate, honest business.
Now, how do people find you?
Well, lazy69ranch.com is our window to the world.
Okay.
That's we're usually, you know, we are owner-operators. We don't have any employees. And so lazy69ranch.com is your best way. Shoot me an email. Ask me questions. Give me a hard time like you guys do.
I love it. Okay. And we loved having you on the show today. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. Catch us next week on Positively Healthy.